Broadcasting presents The Canterville Ghost, voiced by Amanda Youngs on behalf of MCS Agency. A turreted mansion, a book opens.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears, when the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, then shall all the house be still, and peace shall come to Canterville.
Starring Patrick Stewart as Sir Simon de Canterville, Neve Campbell as Ginny, Joan Sims as Mrs. Umney, and Donald Simden as Mr. Umney, Cherry Lungi as Lucille, Edward Wiley as Hiram. A modern train races through lush green, gently rolling countryside. Overhead, storm clouds gather. Leslie Phillips as Lord Henry, Daniel Betts as Francis. Written for television by Robert Benedetti, based on the short story by Oscar Wilde. Directed by Sid McCartney. The train wends its way through the rainy English countryside. Inside, Ginny writes a letter. She's a teenage girl wearing a hat and a sheepskin jacket. Her mother Lucille watches Ginny fondly from the seat opposite. Two younger boys snooze as the train continues on its way.
Well, I guess you guys are just starting back to school after your summer vacation. And here I am in unjolly old England, cooped up with my mom and brothers on my way to some place nobody ever heard of. My dad came over early to start his research at the university. Mom says the grant he got is some big deal, the kind of thing that physicists get all excited about. But I don't see why he had to drag all of us along.
Ginny, don't look so grim. You know, living in another country can give you a whole new perspective.
If I don't die of boredom first.
Ginny's mother, Lucille, looks at her sympathetically. A uniformed guard strides through the carriage.
Canterville, next station. Next stop, Canterville.
Washington, wake up! We're here!
Washington yawns and stretches as the train pulls in.
Oh, I can see Dad!
The two boys race to the carriage door and yell through the window.
England. Sorry about this crazy weather. You know, we get four seasons in a day here, but this will blow over quickly.
Hi. Guys, how was the trip?
The plane was bumpy and Washington threw up in one of those little bags.
Adam, spare the details.
And how about London?
We went to Madame Tussauds. And the scary part with Jack the Ripper and everybody.
We saw Hamlet in the West End.
Guys, this is Mr. Umney. Mr. and Mrs. Umney will be taking care of us. My family, my wife Lucille, my daughter Virginia, and these are my sons, Washington and Adam.
Hi,
Mr. Rumney, help Mr. Rumney with the baggage, guys.
Honey, we have people working for us.
You haven't seen anything. Come on, Ginny, you're gonna love this place.
I can hardly wait.
Outside the station, a gleaming blue old-fashioned Rolls Royce awaits them.
Oh, that's for us, Ginny.
The boys pull a face as Ginny sits smugly in the front passenger seat.
Come on, boys, climb in the back here.
The car follows the road through a pretty village. Mr. Umney raises a hand in greeting to three villagers as they pass.
Ooh, that must be the new ones.
Outside the Canterville Arms pub, two men doff their caps as the car goes past.
Morning.
A woman shuts her upstairs window. Ginny looks around curiously and catches Mr. Umney's eye as he glances away from the road. The car speeds along otherwise empty, narrow country lanes in brilliant sunlight. Then it turns into a tree-lined avenue. As it rolls up the avenue, a young man on a horse gallops across an adjoining field, and for a few seconds his horse keeps pace alongside the car. The dashing rider notices Ginny and smiles.
Good morning.
Ginny looks down shyly and the young man urges his horse on to jump over a fallen tree branch. Finally, the car goes through a stone archway. Washington and Adam lean out of the car windows. The Rolls draws into the gravel drive of Canterville Hall, an imposing period building with turrets and minarets.
It's a castle.
Welcome to Canterville Hall, home for the next 4 months. What do you think, Ginny?
It's old.
May I present Mrs. Omni?
I bid you welcome to Canterville Hall, sir, madam.
I'll see to the luggage.
And to the young mistress. Welcome.
The mistress? Ginny's mistress?
What are we?
You are the young masters.
Masters?
We're masters?
Look out!
Excuse me. Boys!
Terrific!
Someplace, huh?
Guys. Guys, cut it out.
Guys,
get over here.
After you've had a chance to get settled, we'll be serving an early supper.
These are the lords of Canterville Hall. That's Lord Henry. You'll meet him tomorrow when he comes down to sign the lease.
Look, Hiram. I don't see how we can afford this. And the servants?
Well, it's dirt cheap. These aristocratic families are all going broke, and they have to rent these places out. And then there's the silly stories.
Stories? What kind of stories?
Nothing, really.
As her parents walk away from the portraits, Ginny lingers in front of one, a man in Elizabethan clothes.
Hello?
Mrs. Umney ushers the boys away from suits of armor on display.
What was that?
Oh, pay no attention to that.
Just the wind. These old places make a lot of noise. Come on!
Hiram leads his family upstairs. At the foot of the staircase, Mrs. Umney looks up and around her nervously. Ginny studies the portrait of the Elizabethan man. He stands, one hand on his hip, frowning. Later, Ginny and her parents finish a meal in the formal dining room, by the candlelight and under a chandelier.
Wonderful meal, Mr. Umney. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I'll tell Mrs. Omni.
Ginny, you hardly ate anything.
Oh, it's too cold to eat.
Well, there wasn't exactly central heating when this place was built, right, Mr. Omni?
Quite right, sir.
I'd better go see what those boys are doing.
They'll be fine. Let them play. You going to bed so soon, Ginny?
Yeah. Maybe I'll get warm there.
Good night, honey.
Good night.
Lucille looks at Hiram. Behind her, a fire blazes in the hearth.
She just needs a little time.
I suppose.
Upstairs, Ginny pauses by the portrait. The arm on a nearby suit of armor relaxes its grip on a spear. She hurries to the boys who play fight on a landing.
What a stupid trick, you guys. I could have broken my neck.
Downstairs, the Umneys clear the dinner table.
Those two boys are whirling dervishes. No discipline.
Not to worry. They won't last the night.
Yes. The old boy was at it with the moaning as soon as they arrived.
Starved for attention he is. How long is it since the McKendricks?
Nearly 2 years. I hear the poor woman is still in the institution.
Well, good luck to her. That's all I say.
Mr. Umney swigs port from a brandy glass. In the library, the grandfather clock chimes midnight. In a bedroom, Lucille pulls on bed socks while Hiram brings her a glass of port.
What was that?
Probably just the Umneys closing up for the night.
Cheers.
In their bedroom, the boys pillow fight. The door handle begins to rattle. They pause the fight and both look at the door. They creep over to the closed door. They both leap as one under the eiderdown on the bed. In her bedroom, Ginny sleeps restlessly, snuggling up to her lace pillow. The door rattles and she opens her eyes wide. When the noise stops, she settles down to sleep again. Ginny gets out of bed and goes to a bedside table where a pitcher and bowl stand. She pours water into the heavy bowl and carries it carefully over to the closed door. Cautiously, she grasps the door handle and wrenches it open.
Here, Turks!
She throws the water out into the corridor, then stands and looks around. There's nobody there. Slowly, she backs into her room. She listens intently to the ghostly sounds. The next morning, at breakfast.
So, how did everyone sleep on their first night?
Something wrong, guys?
Didn't you hear it?
You heard it too?
It thumped on our door.
I thought it was you.
Well, there may have been some noise in the hall, but I'm sure that was just the Omni's closing up. Isn't that right, Mr. Omni?
Closing up? Who quite possibly is it?
There, you see? Nothing to lose any sleep over.
Now, guys, what do you say we check this place out?
Come on, I'll give you the $2 tour.
The boys gleefully leave their breakfast things. Lucille turns to Ginny.
Hey. It's a new place, okay? You'll get used to it.
What choice do I have?
Lucille leaves Ginny toying with her cereal. Hiram takes the boys into the library.
The library is my favorite room.
Look at all these books! Wow! Look at this!
Be careful with that.
What a wonderful room.
Look, this book contains the whole history of the Cantervilles.
Wow!
Oh, look, someone must have spilled something here.
Looks like blood.
Oh.
Oh, gross! Disgusting.
Well, maybe you ought to try to get it up. Honey, you know in my carry-on bag,
I know. The miracle.
Right.
I'll go get it.
Thanks, honey.
Lucy.
Mm-hmm?
You don't need to clean that. That's why we're paying Mrs. Omni.
You know what I'm like.
Lucille goes to kneel by the bloodstain on the stone hearth of the fireplace. A car makes its way up the gravel drive towards the ivy-covered Canterville Hall. The Omnis rush out.
Morning, my lord.
Are they still here?
Yes, my lord.
Oh, Lord Canterville, those two boys are going to drive me mad, I swear.
Now, Mrs. Omni, we shall have to make allowances, things being what they are. Any trouble?
Only noises so far, my lord.
Well, at least they've lasted the first night.
In the library.
With deference, sir, Lord Canterville.
Hey, there. Gone.
Mrs. Omni faints into a chair. The bloodstain's gone.
That stain, Mrs. Otis, was the blood of Lady Eleanor de Canterville, who died on that very spot in 1584. It has been the wonder of the county for 400 years, and until today has resisted all efforts at removal.
Well, I didn't know it was so special.
Mrs. Omni, are you all right?
I suppose so.
Oh, Mrs. Omni, I'm so sorry.
Oh, Bobby, this bodes ill.
Mrs. Omni, we don't believe in such things.
You'll see. I have seen things with my own eyes. I have seen things happen in this house. May Providence watch over you.
Shaken, Mrs. Omni leaves the library.
This is Henry, Lord Canterville. Lord Canterville, my family. My wife, Lucille.
How do you do?
How do you do?
My daughter, Virginia.
Oh, Virginia, how do you do?
And these two rascals are my sons, Washington and Adam.
Pleased to meet you.
How did she die? That Lady Eleanor, did somebody kill her?
No one knows. Her husband, my unfortunate ancestor, Simon de Canterville, disappeared mysteriously after her death. His body has never been recovered.
Wow!
But his spirit has haunted this hall ever since.
It was a ghost! Awesome!
All right, guys, that's enough. That's enough. Go outside and play. Okay. Say goodbye to Lord Canterville.
Goodbye, lads.
Go on.
Goodbye.
Lord Canterville, with all due respect, sir, the laws of physics are not going to be repealed even for the British aristocracy.
You may think anything you like, Mr. Otis. And you must remember that I warned you. Elise?
Thank you.
Hiram, before we sign anything, don't you think
we consider ourselves warned? We are happy, Lord Canterville, to be leasing the hall, ghost and all, until next June. Cool. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Otis and Mrs. Otis and Virginia, of course.
Ginny, we're saying goodbye to Lord Canterville.
Oh, bye.
Goodbye. You must come to dinner with me one evening. Goodbye, all.
We'd be
delighted. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Left behind in the library, Ginny touches the red heart-shaped stone that adorns the cover of the big Canterville family book. The front page reads, "To Canterville, an historic," and there's a picture of an angel holding a heart. Looking to the fireplace, she sees the same angel there in stone relief work, but with an indentation where the heart should be. Slowly, she approaches the big fireplace and takes a closer look at the images standing out of the stonework. There are 5 coats of arms featured. They replicate the ones in the family history book. Ginny's gaze is diverted from the stonework by Mr. Umney.
So, you've found the prophecy, have you?
Is that what it is? A prophecy about what?
I couldn't say for certain.
Is it about the ghost?
I don't involve myself in such things. Not like Mrs. Umney.
Mr. Umney lights a candle in an enormous silver candlestick and leaves Ginny. The family sit at the table after dinner.
Looks like the storm will last the night.
I wonder if he'll come again.
Now, Wash, like I've told you, there are no ghosts.
But Lord Canterville said...
The universe operates on certain fixed principles. Now, I admit we don't understand them all yet. And sometimes we call the things we don't understand supernatural. But eventually... there will be a natural explanation for everything. So, guys, up until then, put your faith in science, not superstition.
But we all heard it.
I know some of us say that we heard something, Jenny. And I also know that some of us would like nothing more than to turn this family around and go back home. That's not gonna happen, okay? So finish your supper and stop scaring your brothers. There are no ghosts.
The two boys nod earnestly at their father. Outside, forks of lightning illuminate the dark clouds in the night sky. In the library, the grandfather clock chimes midnight. Elsewhere, an arched wooden door covered in cobwebs opens. In the corridor outside the bedrooms, ornately patterned carpets muffle sound. Lightning flashes through the leaded windows, whose drapes are left open, casting an eerie light on the corridor. Inside her bedroom, by the light of a candelabra, Ginny sits over a letter to her friends.
Hey guys, help. I'm stuck in this grungy old house my dad rented for us. There's nothing to do, and nobody for miles around except these 2 spooky old people who take care of the place. And on top of it, I think the place is haunted. At first I thought it was just my stupid brothers, but now I think maybe something is really going on. Of course, my dad, the brilliant physicist, refused to believe it could be a ghost and blamed it all on me, as usual.
Behind her, the bedroom door opens and the candles flicker. Ginny looks up.
Washington, Adam, you guys better cut this out.
A ghostly hand, it's Simon de Canterville. She runs out of her bedroom and shuts the door behind her. Backing off a few more paces, she looks around her in the corridor. As she moves towards it, Sir Simon comes striding through the door into the corridor. She stumbles. Her brothers appear, dressed as knights.
Come at you, sir! Ghost!
The ghost sends the boys flying.
Leave them alone, you big bully!
What's going on?
Guys, what are you doing?
It's him!
Who? What are you talking about?
He's right there.
Lucille and Hiram look through the ghost and back again, baffled. Holding a candelabra, Hiram walks right through Sir Simon, whose mouth opens in astonishment. Sir Simon vanishes in a flash. Hiram returns to his family.
There's no one there.
The Umneys.
Are you all right?
We're fine, Mrs. Umney. It's just a prank that got a little out of hand.
Oh, I wouldn't be so sure.
Let us not meddle, Mrs. Umney. Come along, my dear. Bid you bye.
Ginny, I don't want you scaring your little brothers anymore. Now, it was a good joke, but enough is enough.
But he was there.
Guys, I know you think you saw something, but it was probably just the lightning and your imagination with a lot of help from your sister.
How can you say that?
Virginia, I know you don't want to be here anymore. Well, I'm sorry. I can't do anything about that. But you are not going to make the rest of our lives miserable. Now, everybody get back to bed. And you guys put that stuff back in the kitchen tomorrow morning.
Hiram.
Lucy, come on.
We're sorry, Ginny. Honest.
It's okay, Mom. Let him think what he wants.
Lucille ushers Ginny into her room.
Maybe the wind blew something over, or the lightning cast a shadow. You know, it's a strange place. Your eyes play tricks.
Yeah, that must have been it.
Bye, things will be better in the morning. Night-night. Don't
let the bedbugs bite.
Right.
Some bedbug.
Outside the hall, a slender leafless almond tree stands. Mr. Umney picks up fallen branches.
Good morning.
Morning, madam.
Maybe the rain will help this poor thing. Doesn't show any buds.
It's been like that ever since... as long as anyone can remember, madam.
So why don't you take it out?
Lord Canterville's orders is not to be disturbed.
Odd.
Mr. Umney. I'm just going into town.
I'll get the car for you, sir.
No, that's all right. I'll drive myself.
No. No trouble at all, sir.
Honey, before you go, I'm worried about Ginny. Maybe she really did see something last night.
Oh, Lucy. It's just her way of getting back at us for taking her away from her friends. And the worst thing we could possibly do is let her think we could be frightened into going home. No telling what she'd do then.
Maybe. But there were all those weird noises.
What noises? Just the power of suggestion. Don't let her suck you in. Remember, like I say,
everything has a rational explanation. Yeah, I know.
Good. Get her out. Make some friends. Meet the neighbors. She'll be fine, you'll see.
I hope you're right.
Indoors, Ginny looks at a portrait.
Morning, Miss.
Hi. Mrs. Umney, this is Sir Simon, isn't it?
Oh, why, yes. Fine figure of a man.
That look on his face. What do you think he's feeling?
Seems pretty fierce.
Yeah. But there's something else, too.
Well, now that you mention it, yes. Maybe a little sad, perhaps.
And lonely.
Yes. Perhaps so.
Mrs. Umney leaves Ginny gazing pensively at the portrait. In the library, Washington reads a leather-bound volume, and Adam takes a shotgun off the stone mantelpiece. He glances where the bloodstain used to be. The bloodstain's back.
Mom!
What is it, boys?
Look! I saw it first!
Oh, no. I thought we had it up.
I think the ghost just got mad and killed somebody else and spilled the blood right here.
Honey, there isn't any ghost.
Well, somebody made it come back.
Well, we'll just have to clean it up again.
What is it?
It's nothing. Would you go get the cleaner?
Yes, Mom.
We may have to start keeping this room locked up.
The blue Rolls-Royce arrives at the whitewashed pub, the Canterville Arms. Several pushbikes are leaning against the outside wall. Hiram gets out and goes inside. It's busy.
What? Back in the thing, with the third ferret, and he says...
What?
The locals look at Hiram curiously.
Hello. Hi. Hello. I'm Hiram Otis. My family and I are renting Canterville Hall.
My.
And I was wondering if you could direct me to the post office, please.
That'll be here. I'm the postman.
Oh, thank you. And what about the local police station in case of emergency?
That'll be here too. I'm the constable when one is needed.
As a constable, you're a better postman.
telephone exchange?
Aye.
And what about a doctor?
Well, I'm the local vet, if that's any good.
Thank you. It's all very compact and convenient. I'll be back soon, I'm sure.
You can count on it.
Hiram makes his way out again. The locals seem amused. He gives them a nervous smile at the door.
Seems a nice enough sort, eh?
How long do you give up?
Well, they've already lasted much longer than most.
Well, I've got a fiver that says they're gone in a week at the outside.
Make it a tenner.
Fiver?
Put me down for 20.
20?
Outside the gates of Canterville Hall, Ginny stands muffled up against the cold before an easel, on which there's a good likeness of the gates and ornate gateposts. She's holding a paint palette and a brush. A rider approaches on the driveway to the hall. The handsome young man dismounts and comes over to her.
Hello.
Hello.
Mind if I look?
Suit yourself.
It's really very good.
No, it's just a sketch.
I'm Francis Tilton. How do you do?
Oh, Virginia Otis. We're renting Canterville Hall.
Yeah, I know.
No?
I saw you the day you arrived.
Oh, I don't remember.
Actually, the whole district is talking about you.
Really? What do they say?
Oh, they just wonder how long you'll be staying here in England.
Oh, we're just staying till June. You live around here?
I'm your nearest neighbor, the Cheshire Chase, just on the other side of the Pinewood. Are you enjoying your visit?
Not exactly.
I suppose you miss your friends.
Yeah, I do.
Your boyfriend especially.
Oh, well, I don't exactly have a boyfriend especially.
What a pity. I mean, I'm surprised. That's all about a beautiful girl like you.
Yeah, sure.
So how do you like Canterville Hall?
Oh, well, let's just say it's peculiar. You ever been there?
You used to go there a lot. Years ago, when the Cantervilles were still here. I wonder if it's changed much.
Oh, well, why don't you come over and see for yourself?
I'd be delighted. How about tonight?
Sure. How about dinner? 7?
Right. See you then.
Okay.
As Frances goes, Ginny smiles to herself.
I can't believe I did that.
Frances remounts his chestnut horse. Later, the blue Rolls-Royce circles in the driveway and pulls up, allowing Hiram to get out. Inside, Lucille comes running down the staircase to greet her husband.
Hi, honey.
Hi, honey.
How was town?
Well, the pub does everything but deliver babies, but though I didn't ask him about that. Everything okay here?
Yeah, it's fine. The boys have been out exploring, and Ginny went out painting.
Well, we got some time to ourselves. We can relax a bit.
Yeah.
Hey, I met a neighbor and invited him to dinner tonight, okay?
Sure.
That's great. I'll tell Mrs. Umney.
Thanks.
See? Told you she'd be fine.
Yeah, hi. You know that stain on the floor? It was there again this morning.
Really?
And it smelled a little like oil paint. But it's okay, I got it up again.
Well, maybe we better start keeping that door locked at night, just in case.
Yeah, good idea.
Ginny puts her easel and paints on a table in the library. She looks around idly for a moment before her gaze alights on the Canterville family history, with the red, heart-shaped stone fixed to the cover. She goes over and picks up the heavy book, taking it with her over to the fireplace. She sits on a leather-covered footstool and turns the page to the prophecy, illustrated with coats of arms, just like those above the fireplace.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears, when the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, then shall all the house be still, and peace shall come to Canterville.
We're the same. When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin, when a child gives up tears and the barren almond bears, when the silent chapel bell sounds the ghostly sinner's knell, then shall all the house be still, and peace shall come to Canterville.
Ginny's fingers touch the red heart on the book cover, and it comes loose into her hand. She fingers it thoughtfully, and her eyes wander over to the relief work angel, whose hands clasp together below a heart-shaped space where the stone is indented. She gets up, putting the book down on the footstool. Holding the heart-shaped stone, she takes a pair of library steps and moves them to below the angel on the mantelpiece. She clambers up them to the top and pushes the heart-shaped stone into the indented stonework above the angel's hands. As she does so, one of the bookcases swings out to reveal a secret passageway covered in cobwebs. Quickly, she climbs down the library steps and lifts a cobweb to gain access to the secret passage. She makes her way along a dusty corridor, through an ancient wooden door, and slowly follows a voice she hears. Ginny pauses at a door.
This be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, no man ever loved.
A light pressure from her hand causes chains on the other side to drop to the ground. The door swings open, revealing bearded Sir Simon holding a parchment. A crow perches near him. Sir Simon gestures and Ginny rushes back through the corridor into the library, just as the bookcase swings the secret doorway closed again. Evening. An old-fashioned open-topped car pulls up outside Canterville Hall. Francis hastily adjusts his waistcoat as he goes to the door, which Mr. Umney opens.
Evening, Umney.
Good evening, Your Grace.
It's been a long time.
Too long, Your Grace.
Listen, I'm not a duke.
Not a duke?
Just for this evening.
Very good, Your Grace.
Francis rolls his eyes and follows Mr. Umney.
Sir, madam.
Hello. I'm Virginia's mother.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Otis. I'm Francis Still, and this must be Mr. Otis.
Indeed. It's nice to meet you.
Very pleased.
And these are our two sons, Washington and Adam.
Hi.
Francis Still.
Hello.
Ginny walks in a floral dress.
And, I guess you've already met our daughter, Virginia.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Madam, dinner will be served almost at once. Your Grace?
Umney.
He called you Your Grace.
Well, yes, technically that's what I am.
A lord?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm the fourth Duke of Cheshire.
Really? You don't look that old.
Well, you see, my parents died in an accident when I was very young, and I inherited.
I'm so sorry. So what do we call you then? Your Grace?
Oh, please, just call me Francis. or whatever you like.
Madam, Mrs. Umney informs me that dinner will be served immediately.
Thank you.
Good. Well, let's not stand on ceremony. Let's sit down and eat.
Boys?
A smiling Francis waits for Ginny to go first. A huge full moon hangs low in the night sky.
So,
Francis, you must know this place pretty well.
Well, I haven't been here since the Cantabers left, but it hasn't changed at all.
You know about the ghost, too?
Adam?
Oh, that's all right. No, in fact, I do know about the ghosts. I mean, everyone around here does.
Well, we take it with a rather large grain of salt.
Except those of us who've seen him.
Yeah.
Come on, we don't want to bore Francis.
Not at all, no. In fact, I've seen him, too.
Really? Well, I suppose every place has its superstitions, its mass hallucinations.
And the bloodstain? You've seen that?
Well, years ago, I saw it, yes.
Well, it's gone now.
It's gone. But no one's ever been able to remove that.
Mom cleaned it up with stain remover. It came back once, but we got it this time. Yeah, come on, Sean.
Whoa, guys? Guys?
Hang on a minute, guys?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, I'd like to see it.
Good. Come on.
On their way to the library.
We've been keeping this door locked in case anyone wanted to tamper with the stain again.
Now it's green!
I know the door was locked.
Hiram touches the stain, then sniffs his fingers and turns to Ginny.
Oil paint, all right. And I guess we all know where that came from.
What? Not now, Hiram.
I don't know how you managed to get in here, young lady. But this is in very poor taste.
Dad, let's discuss this later. Francis, I know you have to get home.
Yes, of course. Yeah, I ought to be getting back. Thank you for a wonderful meal.
Your coat.
Yes, thank you.
Hiram glares at Ginny.
Go say goodbye.
To the boys.
Bed in 10 minutes.
Do you think Ginny did it?
No way. It was him, all right. Green blood. He's making fun of us.
Yeah.
Well, he won't get away with it this time. Because I've got an idea.
Yeah.
Francis and Ginny walk to his car.
What was all that about?
Francis, have you really seen the ghost, or were you just saying that to defend me?
No, I really saw him. It was about 6 years ago. We were visiting and playing croquet on the lawn. Just after sunset. He appeared right there, by that tree, playing ninepins with his own bones. And my aunt fainted dead away.
Well, the ghost has been doing stuff like that to us, too. But my dad's a big-shot scientist who can't bring himself to think it's a ghost, so he blames it all on me.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thanks.
What are you gonna do?
I don't know, but I'm gonna do something.
Be careful.
I will.
Virginia? How about tomorrow?
I think I can find the time.
The young couple smile at each other and Francis drives away. The smile vanishes from Ginny's face as she notices the leafless almond tree.
And the barren almond bears.
The crow perches on a branch of the tree. The crow flies to Sir Simon's cell room.
Gabriel, do they retire to their beds? Splendid. Before another dawn, we shall bid farewell to these Americans. I was beset by two upstart boys, denigrated by a little snip of a girl, and indignity upon indignity. Ignored by their parents. Well, I will tonight a special effort make. First, will I to the parents' room, there to lay a clammy hand upon the woman's brow, while I whisper in her trembling husband's ear the awful secrets of the charnel house. Then to the boys, where I will gibber and stab myself thrice in the throat. Then turn I to the girl, for her I will do such things. What they are yet, I know not, but they shall be the terrors of the earth. The bell invites me. Gabriel, thou hast the storm forgot. Blow winds, crack your cheeks. Thanks, my trusty familiar. Now to work. chance. A grand entrance.
Sir Simon emerges from a fireplace. Then he stares at a hooded knight in armor with eyes blazing into the corridor.
A thousand pardons. Pray, proceed.
Sir Simon vanishes and reappears in his cell.
A ghost. Another ghost. And such a one. It rose like a colossus, and in its hand an Ethiop's dagger. And from its eyes there streamed demonic light. Gabriel, think you we could somehow manage that ourselves? It had a most chilling effect. And now, methinks, we might turn this appearance to our advantage. If you would join with us against these Americans, surely as a fellow ghost, he would feel some kinship. Blood is thicker than water, although to us that is not entirely apt. I'll after and appeal to his ghostly honor. There is yet time before dawn.
In the corridor, the knight raises and lowers his sword.
Hail and well met, Sir Ghost. I bid you a hearty welcome to Canterville Hall. I am Sir Simon de Canterville, the resident spectre. But setting all chat aside, wouldst join with me in an alliance, ghost to ghost?
Sir Simon spies a note hanging round the knight's neck. He reads.
He notices ghost, true and original. Beware of imitations.
He tears a cardboard mask off the knight's face. Then he notices a piece of string running from the knight's sword arm upwards and into the boy's bedroom. Washington and Adam jerk the string. Sir Simon grabs the knight's arm.
Duped. Mocked. Ridiculed.
He bursts into the boy's room. Psychically, Sir Simon throws them into the corridor.
Now, by the bones of my ancestors, I swear, when twice the cock hath called the sun, deeds of blood shall be done upon your heads. Yet crow again, and cry havoc, murder shall walk abroad. Yet crow again, and cry havoc. Perdition take the naughty fowl. I've seen the day when with my good strong spear I'd have made him call for me, and 'twere in death. Take thou this!
He unleashes a psychic bolt at the knight, who collapses, revealing an electric lamp that powered his eyes. Ginny emerges from around a corner with her brothers behind.
Hey, that could have been us. Come on, let's see what a big, brave ghost can do to a girl and two little boys. I dare you.
Why must I be afflicted by these Americans?
He vanishes just as Hiram arrives.
What on earth is going on? What is this?
Are you all right? We're okay.
This is the last straw, young lady.
What?
Somebody could have been hurt.
Oh, you could have burned the place down.
That's enough. Okay, you win. As soon as I can arrange it, you are going back to Indiana to live with your Aunt Lydia.
Dad.
Hope you're happy now.
Mom.
Ginny, I think your father's right this time.
Her parents walk off. Ginny rounds on the boys.
We didn't mean to do anything wrong, Ginny.
We were just trying to give him a dose of his own medicine.
The boys scurry into their room.
Sir Simon, I hope you're satisfied.
The next morning, the sun shines on Canterville Hall. The country lanes in the vicinity are empty, and fluffy white clouds scud across the sky. Ginny's out riding with Francis. A nearby stag lifts his antlered head from grazing as their horses gallop nearby.
Virginia, you're riding like the devil's after you.
Maybe he is.
I know a place we can talk.
Francis jumps down and helps Ginny dismount. an overgrown garden with an angel statue.
I used to come here when I was little. It's my favorite place.
It's like I've been here before.
What's wrong?
My parents are gonna send me home.
Oh. Why?
My brothers got the ghost mad this morning and he really let loose. And my dad thinks I was trying to blow the place up. He thinks I've been trying to scare the family into going home, but...
But what?
But now I don't want to leave. I mean, it's weird, because at first I hated coming here. But now, now I feel I belong.
Francis and Ginny sit on a bench and gaze at each other.
I feel that too.
He takes her hand.
Maybe there's some way to convince your parents. I mean, maybe they'll see the ghost for themselves.
No. Neither of them can see him. I mean, he was standing right in the middle of the hall and my dad walked straight through him.
You know, they say they're not to see ghosts. You have to believe in them.
But everyone around here can see him without any trouble.
Oh, we grew up with ghosts. I mean, our history's full of them.
So it's a catch-22 then. My parents don't believe because they can't see him, and they can't see him because they don't believe.
I'm afraid so.
But if they did believe, then they could see him. That's it. Wish me luck, Francis.
Virginia.
Ginny kisses Francis and rushes away. He puts his hand up to his lips. In the library, Ginny takes the steps and puts them before the mantelpiece. She presses on the red heart held by the angel, and the bookcase again reveals the secret passageway with all its cobwebs. She goes through confidently this time until she reaches Sir Simon's cell door. She goes in.
I really have to talk to you.
No, you have no right here.
And you have no right to ruin my life.
What?
All that moaning and rattling and thumping, my dad blames me for all that. And you've used an awful lot of my good oil paints for that dumb blood stain of yours, and of course he blames me for that too, and that blast this morning, scaring my brothers half to death. That really tore it. And now, just when I meet someone I really like and I want to stay, my dad is sending me home. And he's sending me home on account of you.
But I knew not. I must rattle my chains and groan through keyholes and walk abroad at night. I have no choice.
Why not?
That concerns you not.
It does, when you're ruining my life, Sir Simon. You have to help me. You have to make him believe.
What?
He doesn't believe in ghosts.
Doesn't believe? He has ignored me quite. In 4 centuries of haunting, I have never been treated so. Your father did, without a care, amble through my person.
Well, that's because he couldn't see you. Francis says that because he doesn't believe in you, he can't see you.
Gabriel, that would explain it. I was afeard that I was losing my powers.
Oh, no, I thought you were wonderful.
It's her?
Yes. Well, I don't usually scream. I mean, roller coasters and scary movies, not a peep. But when you came in that first time, well, you heard me.
A most gratifying scream.
Anyways, if we can make him see you, then he'll have to believe.
Disbeliever to believe. A cynic into faith. That would test my mettle. But how?
I know just the thing. I'll introduce you to him as a ghost he already believes in. Then he'll see you without any trouble.
Is there such a ghost?
Yes. We saw a performance of Hamlet once in London, and everybody loved the ghost of Hamlet's father. Partly because he came in early while everyone was still awake, but you'd be great in that part.
Thou speaks wiser than thou knowest. I gave Will my thoughts on that role when he did visit here in 1599.
You knew Shakespeare?
I did. And save for my familiar Gabriel, his words have been my only companions for 400 years. Thou knowest how Hamlet's father must be confined by day and walk abroad at night. Where dost thou think Will Shakespeare got as that?
From you?
In me, you see the genius, the original. You might almost say the part was writ for me.
I knew you'd be terrific.
And you must play Prince Hamlet. We will perform it in the banqueting hall. Gabriel will provide the stage effects. And you must wear a cloak.
He drapes a cloak around Ginny.
Just my size.
For myself, my armor will well suit, which last I wore before the Virgin Queen at Kenilworth.
Until tomorrow night?
Ginny sweeps off in the cloak, leaving Sir Simon lost in his thoughts. He addresses his familiar, the crow.
Oh, Gabriel. I scarcely dare to think it. Might it be she at last? It is too much to hope. And yet she is a lass. Unparalleled.
And then Hamlet says, oh my, what?
Prophetic soul.
Oh my prophetic soul. Okay, good, I think I've got it.
I hope this works.
Yeah, you and me both. What's that over there?
It's the old chapel. It's one of the required sites of the district. Would you like to see it?
Sure.
This is the Canterville family plot. It goes all the way back through the centuries.
Are Sir Simon and Lady Eleanor here?
No, I don't know if anyone knows where they are. Oh, when I was little, I used to climb right to the top of the bell tower. The bell's cracked, so it doesn't ring, but...
The silent chapel bell.
Sorry?
Oh, nothing.
Look. The moon is rising.
Oh, it's a blue moon.
Look.
Second full moon of the month. It's supposed to make people fall in love.
Let's look inside.
Smiling, Francis follows Ginny inside the candlelit chapel.
This is wonderful.
Slowly, she walks past dark wooden pews and looks up to two colourful stained glass windows.
It's like time stands still here.
She turns back to Francis. They look into each other's eyes and their lips meet in a kiss.
As if I've known you all my life.
I feel that too. But I'm scared.
Why?
Well, let's face it, sooner or later I'll be going home to Indiana.
But nothing could come between us. Not if we're really meant for each other.
You seem so sure.
I am. Felt this way before, Miss. Hard to be sure.
Right. And what if we're wrong?
But we must at least give it a chance. Don't you feel that?
I don't know. I don't know.
I see. Sorry. So sorry.
Francis turns abruptly and walks out of the chapel. Slowly, Ginny becomes aware of a ghostly hand on her tear-stained cheek.
Why do you season this, your love, with so much salt water?
Oh, Sir Simon, love. I've never felt this before. I don't know what to do.
Ginny leans on the old man, who holds his arms stiffly near her. Then he cradles her head in his hands.
You fear the thrill that seized your heart when you did kiss that boy.
It is awfully scary.
Love it is, and not to be denied, and it can bring you joy untold. But if we are weak, if we succumb to fear or green-eyed jealousy, then it can wreak a terrible devastation on our soul.
And nowhere will I speak.
Sir Simon breaks away and walks a few steps off with his back to Ginny.
But never to have loved. More sad is still to have loved and let it slip away. Is never to have lived at all. Then love. And come what sorrow may, it cannot countervail the bliss that one sweet minute gives you in his sight. Come, go you to this boy. And let love guide you.
Ginny rushes to the chapel door.
Oh, Sir Simon, thank you. Thank you.
She kisses his cheek and hurries out through the graveyard and after Francis. Sir Simon stands at the chapel door and watches as Ginny catches up and throws her arms round Francis. Sir Simon touches his cheek.
Lady, you have bereft me of all words.
He blows a kiss towards Ginny. She and Francis share a kiss and then an enormous hug. Then they make their way back to the hall, arms around each other. Later, inside the hall, Francis and Ginny prepare for Hamlet. Gabriel the Crow flutters nearby.
All right, I think we're set.
Do you have everything?
Yeah, my costumes and things are up there. Are you two ready? Good. Come on, everybody, showtime!
Virginia, remember, it's prophetic soap.
Prophetic soap.
Good luck. This way, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. and Mrs. Omni, would you please take your seats here?
Your grace.
Now, the performance will take place from the gallery.
Ginny to the boys.
Now, listen. He's a little nervous, so don't make any rude noises or pull any practical jokes, okay? Promise?
Wouldn't dare.
Good. Now, remember, at the beginning of the play, Hamlet's father has died, and his uncle has married his mother. Now, in this scene, Hamlet meets the ghost of his father who tells him that he was actually murdered by the uncle. I'll be Hamlet, and we have a special guest star playing the ghost.
Hey, wait till all the kids at school hear we had a real ghost playing a ghost for us. This is wild.
You know, one rarely gets the chance to see Shakespeare performed by somebody who actually knew him.
Smoke billows through the balustrade of the wooden gallery above the door. Amid the fierce storm, Sir Simon appears on the gallery wearing a metal helmet. He raises his hand in salute.
I revoke. Whither wilt thou lead me? Speak, I go no further.
Mark me!
I will.
My hour is almost come, when I to sulphurous and tormenting flames must render up myself.
Alas, poor ghost.
Pity me not, but lend thy serious hearing to what I shall unfold.
Speak, I am bound to hear.
I am thy father's spirit, doomed for a certain term to walk the night, and for the day confined to fast in fires. Till the foul crimes done in my days of nature are burnt and purged away!
Wow! Double wow!
List. List. Oh, list. If ever thou didst thy dear father love, revenge his foul and most unnatural murder!
Murder?
Murder, most foul, as in the best it is. But this most foul, strange and unnatural.
Haste me to know it.
Know then, thou noble youth, the serpent that did sting thy father's life now wears his crown.
Oh, my prophetic soul. My uncle?
Aye, that incestuous, that adulterous beast. Won to his lust the will of my most seeming virtuous queen,
Oh, Hamlet, what a falling off was there from me whose love...
Sir Simon clasps a hand to his chest. Francis scans a book for the line.
Whose love was of that dignity, that it went hand in hand even with the vow I made to her in marriage.
Sir Simon, what is it?
I'm sorry, I can't. Forgive me. Forgive me.
He fades away. In the gallery, Ginny looks uncertain. The Otis family members seated below the gallery look around the firelit room, puzzled.
Wonderful, Lucas.
That was rad!
Yeah.
Would you please congratulate Miss Virginia on her outstanding performance?
Gave me the chills, I can tell you.
Yes, I will. Thank you.
If you'll excuse us. Your Grace.
Here she comes.
That was awesome, Ginny.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was wonderful.
Ginny, really, I don't know what to say.
Oh, that's okay, Dad.
No, really. I don't know how you and your friend did it, but it was quite an illusion.
Hiram, you just
I'll figure it out eventually, but it was a first-rate effect.
Effect?
Of course. I'm just amazed you went to such trouble for a practical joke. Well, it's late. We better turn in. Good night, Francis. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hiram and Lucille go, leaving Francis and Ginny alone.
I'm sorry. Your father just seems to refuse to believe.
Yeah. I'm more worried about Sir Simon.
May I see you tomorrow?
Yes.
Good night.
Squeezing her arm in farewell, Francis leaves. By the flickering firelight, Ginny's thoughtful.
I'm sorry, I can't. Forgive me.
I don't know why you give her such a hard time.
Look, Lucy, I know there's an explanation for all of this. I just haven't figured it out yet.
Hi, the explanation is simple. The house is haunted.
You really believe that?
Yes, I do. Sir Simon is a ghost. And as far as Ginny is concerned, you've acted like a complete idiot. For the past couple of years, you two have been at each other. You used to be so close.
I admit I'm having a problem dealing with her, okay? I don't know. She used to sit with me, she used to talk to me. And now she's growing up. Most of the time, I have no idea what she's feeling, what she's thinking.
Honey, most of the time she doesn't know herself. She's a teenager. It's tough.
I suppose. But there's one thing that hasn't changed, Luce. There are still no ghosts.
You take the cake.
Where are you going?
I'm going to check on our daughter, see if she's all right.
Hiram follows Lucille into Ginny's bedroom, where the blankets cover a huddled shape.
Ginny.
Let her sleep. Promise I'll speak to her in the morning. Come on.
There's a pile of cushions under the blankets in Ginny's bed. Ginny herself makes her way through the secret passageway to Sir Simon's cell door.
Sir Simon?
Clutching a candelabra, Ginny goes inside Sir Simon's cell. He sits uncertainly on his bed, his hand to his mouth. Gabriel perches nearby.
Sir Simon, what's wrong? Why did you stop like that?
I've read that speech so often. But just now, the meaning struck me as never before. Oh, Virginia. If I were to tell you the secrets of my prison house, you would hate me as I hate myself.
Nothing could make me hate you.
Ginny puts the candelabra down on the table by the bed, lays the cloak down on the bed, and sits next to the ghost.
would wish to know how I became a ghost.
Well, the book said that you were suspected of killing your wife, but I didn't believe it.
It's true.
It is.
For years, our lives were sweet and full. And then the green-eyed monster in my mind did sow his seed, which, like a canker, shriveled up my love. There was a man who I believed a friend. A friend I took for truth. What he told me, that like Hamlet's mother, my wife had been unfaithful to me. I fell into a jealous rage. I locked her in the house. I forbade to her all company. I berated her constantly. Her very denials inflamed my madness. I drove her to such despair that at length I dragged her into madness too. And one terrible night, there by that fireplace, she took my dagger and she killed herself. And she died in my arms. My tears mingled with her blood. You see, that stain is ours.
Sir Simon.
I buried her secretly in a place that she loved best in the world. And I put an angel there to guard.
The garden. I've been there. Francis took me.
And soon, I learned that she was innocent. My friend had lied. He had wanted her for himself. She loved me. She was loyal. And every day, every moment since then, I miss her. And that is why I could not bear to see you lose your love.
And how did you die then?
I summoned her family here to the house, and I confessed to them my crimes, and I bid them do with me whatever they wished. And her brothers brought me here to this cell. They chained me to the wall, and here I starved, a lingering death.
How horrible.
I would die a thousand deaths if I could undo what I've done. But there was more. They brought a witch who conjured a spell that, like Hamlet's father, I was doomed to walk the night and for the day confined, here to brood on my sins. But most of all, remembering her.
And when do you sleep?
I am forbid to close my eyes. By day I'm here, by night I haunt. It is ordained. I have not slept for over 400 years, and in truth, I'm so very, very tired.
Tears sparkle in Ginny's eyes. She reaches for the cloak and drapes it gently around Sir Simon's shoulders. He smiles faintly as she kneels by his feet.
Poor, poor Sir Simon. Isn't there any place that you can sleep?
Oh, yes, that peaceful garden. The angel of death could take me there, to lie in the soft brown earth, listening to the silence, forgiving life, at peace beside my Alamo.
And can that happen?
Yes, thou canst make it so.
How?
There is a prophecy.
I've read it. But I don't know what it means.
I'll show you. Come, here.
Standing, he wraps the cloak around Ginny and they materialize in the library. Sir Simon seizes the family book.
Here now. Read aloud.
When a gentle girl can win prayer from out the lips of sin. When a child gives up her tears. Am I a gentle girl?
Oh, yes, thou art. And still so young to be called a child.
What do I have to do?
You have wept for my sins. For I have no tears left. Next, you must pray for me. Because I had no faith in love. And then, if you would go with me into the realm of darkness, there to stand before the angel of death and speak for me, the angel will have mercy on me.
Then shall all the house be still, and peace shall come to Canterville. To you.
Oh, yes.
What is it like in the realm of darkness?
I tremble even to think of it. There is mist, and fearful shapes do lurk in it, imprisoned in the voiceless winds. Blown with restless violence, and evil voices whisper in your ear. But if you hold steadfast to your belief and show no fear, they cannot hurt you. Against the purity of faith, the powers of darkness cannot prevail.
I'm not afraid. I'll go with you and tell the angel that you are a good and kind ghost. Who gave me the courage to follow my heart.
Sir Simon kneels before her.
Now you, my lady, and as a true knight should, I pledge my soul to your safety and happiness forever.
He kisses her hands, then looks at the bloodstain.
On that spot did I forfeit my soul.
Ginny clasps his hands in hers and lifts her tear-stained face upwards.
This is Virginia Otis, praying for this poor old ghost, Sir Simon de Canterville, who is very sorry for what he has done. He can't undo it, but he has spent dozens of lifetimes paying for it. You need to forgive him, because he can't forgive himself.
Sir Simon looks up at her, then towards the bloodstain. Ginny follows his gaze as the bloodstain on the roughened hearthstone lightens and then fades away.
You have been heard.
I'm ready now.
Sir Simon gets to his feet. The grandfather clock ticks its way to midnight. Lightning flashes and the candles flicker.
Remember, show no fear. Hold fast to your faith. I could not bear the weight of two loves lost.
I'll be fine.
Ginny and the ghost hold hands, and the fireplace splits in two as the clock chimes midnight.
I can only pass through while the clock chimes.
Clasping hands, they step into the mist and towards the light beyond. The cloak slips from Sir Simon's shoulders, and lightning illuminates their faces. The fireplace closes after them. In the dim library, there's only the cloak on the floor to indicate Ginny has been there. A sunny morning. Hiram enters Ginny's bedroom.
Ginny? Pumpkin? It's me. The old man. Look. I know I've been unreasonable about this whole business, and I'm sorry. I'm gonna try harder to maybe see things more your way. So, please forgive me for being so insensitive. Jinjin?
Hiram shakes Ginny, then pulls back the covers, exposing the cushions in her bed. He runs downstairs.
Lucille? Has anyone seen Ginny? She's not in her room.
She must have gotten up early.
No, her bed hasn't been slept in. All right, let's spread out and search.
Mr. Romney, you know the grounds better than anyone.
The grounds? Yes.
I'll go with Mr. Romney.
Or I'll search down here with Mrs. Romney.
I'll go upstairs.
I'll go with you.
Let's meet back in the library.
Outside, Francis rides up.
Come on, Mr. Romney.
Your Grace, emergency.
Ginny's missing.
Will you search the grounds, Your Grace?
Hiram searches the attic. Lucille comes downstairs.
No sign, no.
Hiram peers from the attic window. Francis and Washington check the overgrown garden where the angel stands.
Let's try the chapel.
Mr. Romney screeches the rolls to a halt at the Canterville Arms.
We need help.
The locals stream after him. One gets on a pushbike. The landlord puts up a closed sign. Cars pull up at a roadside, unloading villagers in wellies to search the woods. Francis runs out of the chapel. The villagers carry stout sticks. Mr. Romney checks with the station master. At Canterville Hall, Hiram paces a corridor with a dazed expression. He pauses, then looks up at Sir Simon's portrait. His expression changes to astonishment as Ginny's face appears briefly in the portrait beside Sir Simon's. She looks blankly at him, then her image fades away. He follows Lucille's voice.
Hiram! It's the cloak she was wearing!
And the stain is truly gone.
Oh, God, she's with him! She's with him!
Oh, Lucy, I've been so blind. If anything's happened to her, I'll never forgive myself.
He falls to his knees. Lucille puts her arms around him tearfully. Nightfall. In the dining room, Francis sits with Hiram and Lucille over the remnants of dinner. Mrs. Romney approaches.
You've not touched your food.
We're not hungry, Mrs. Romney.
Yes, it's the same with us.
Please, we're all exhausted. Just leave it till tomorrow.
Bless you all, and good night.
She'll be in our prayers.
The Romneys retire.
Well, there's nothing more we can do tonight. Let's turn in and get started again in the morning.
Hiram leans forward as if to get up. Suddenly, the lights go out.
What's that? It's coming from the library.
Let's go.
Hiram carries a candelabra into the library, followed by Lucille and Francis. As the clock strikes midnight, Washington and Adam join them before the stone fireplace.
What's happening?
Oh, Dad!
Boys, come here!
The fireplace begins to part again. The boys cling to their parents.
Dad! Where are you?
Ginny?
I can't find my way back!
I've got you!
They form a human chain to reach out to Ginny, but Hiram's grip starts to fail.
Come on, Dad! Where are you?
Virginia, over here!
It's closing!
Francis reaches for Ginny in the mist.
Virginia, take my hand!
Stop, Dad! It's closing!
The whole family tugs as Ginny finds Francis's hand. She just gets back into the library as the fireplace closes.
Ginny, I thought I'd lost you.
Oh, thank heaven it's all over. Oh, Mom.
Moments later, Ginny presses the heart-shaped stone to access the secret passageway behind the bookcase.
We have to see about Sir Simon.
The entire family and Francis troop behind Ginny, who holds a candle, through the cobwebbed corridor to Sir Simon's cell door. Hiram brings up the rear with a candelabra.
I thought it was open. Daddy, we have to get in.
Lucy, hold this.
Hiram goes to the barred door and shoulders it in. With help from Francis, he succeeds.
We have to look after his earthly body.
Ginny kneels before a skeleton chained to the bed.
Poor Sir Simon.
Comfortingly, Francis puts his hand on Ginny's shoulder. Gabriel's on his perch.
We'll take care of him now, Gabriel.
The crow vanishes.
Listen. It's the chapel bell.
As one, the family turns and leaves Sir Simon's cell. Ginny leads the way as they rush out of the house and stare. Washington points. The barren almond tree bears luminous white blossoms. Its branches sway gently in the breeze.
When the silent chapel bell sounds, the ghostly sinners knell. And the barren almond bears. He's been forgiven.
Ginny's eyes glisten with unshed tears. The family share a group hug. At the chapel, the vicar leads pallbearers carrying a wooden coffin. Behind them, Francis, Sir Henry Canterville, and the Otis family. He leads them along a tree-lined pathway, up a few stone steps, and further, past mourners either side of a gravel path. In the overgrown memorial garden where the stone angel stands, the pallbearers hold the coffin suspended by ropes over a grave. Mr. Umney salutes stiffly. Ginny takes the heart-shaped stone and places it on the coffin.
To lie in soft brown earth, listening to silence. To forgive life. To be at peace. Beside my Eleanor.
The coffin is lowered and Ginny smiles. In the dining room, a celebration.
Well, Lord Canterville, now that Sir Simon has been laid to rest, I suppose your family will want to return to the hall?
When you and your family have returned to America, perhaps. Though, actually, we have become quite fond of living in London. Why? Have you something in mind?
Well, I've spoken to the university about extending my research grant.
Oh, Dad, really?
And there are some wonderful schools.
Yes!
And Lucille tells me that she loves England, so would you consider extending the lease indefinitely?
Oh, and of course, we'd be delighted if the Umneys would consider staying on.
Oh, yeah, yes, and we'd promise to be good, wouldn't we, Adam? You bet.
I'm sure there's nothing that Mrs. Umney would enjoy more.
Oh, of course, we would love to.
So what do you say?
Please?
I can think of nothing more fitting than you and your family remaining here for as long as you'd like.
Oh,
cheers.
One more thing. My dear girl, you've rendered my unlucky ancestor a very important service. My family and I are much indebted to you for your marvelous courage. Now, this box contains a ring that belong to the Lady Eleanor. On behalf of the entire Canterville family, I give you our deepest thanks. You're a very extraordinary young lady.
He slips the ring on an awestruck Jenny. Later, she walks hand in hand with Francis. Suddenly, she runs ahead of him towards the memorial garden, and he has to chase to catch her up.
Come back to life.
it's beautiful.
Holding hands, they walk around the transformed garden, now verdant and colourful, with flowers and manicured topiary. They stand before the angel and a plaque.
May this bring the two of you back together, as Sir Simon brought Francis and me together. And Lady Eleanor, Sir Simon made me see what life is, and what death is, and that love is stronger than both.
She picks a red blossom and places it on the plaque, a book which reads, Sir Simon de Canterville and Lady Eleanor de Canterville, to err is human, to forgive, divine.
Please forgive him.
Adieu. 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 Remember me, my gentle girl.
Ginny and Francis share a lingering kiss in front of the angel.
Another sonnet.
Ah, yes, my dear, with the greatest pleasure. Oh, never say that I was false of heart, though absence seemed my flame to qualify. As easy might I from myself depart as from my soul, which in thy breast doth lie. That is my home of love.
The end.